Charles Atha of Atha & Co. has important information for anyone injured in an accident at work. Go on, Charles.
Many people don't realise that in law, employers have a huge duty of care. Even if your actions contributed to the accident, you may still be able to claim compensation.
So even if you think you may have been partly to blame...
Yes, talk to us, and we'll be able to advise on whether you have a claim.
Call Middlesbrough 222-575 or text CLAIM to 81400 now. That's CLAIM to 81400 now. Choose the one you know.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse, and every so often, some extremely lovely writers.
After meeting the author Michelle Munro at the Middlesbrough Literary Festival, we have decided to review the book she has written about her father. It's called The Singer's Singer, The Life and Music of Matt Munro. Born Terry Parsons in Shoreditch in 1930, the youngest of five children, the book tells of a childhood of poverty, his time spent as an evacuee, and how his success in talent shows during his army posting to Hong Kong fed his ambition to become a singer. Terence became Matt Munro at the suggestion of his early mentor, Winifred Atwell. After suffering many ups and downs, he was about to abandon his ambitions as a vocalist when he was recruited to provide the vocals on a Peter Sellers album entitled Songs for the Swingin' Sellers. The interest generated about the true identity of the singer was so great that it eventually led to his being awarded a recording contract of his own. Matt hit the charts with his second single, Portrait of My Love, in 1960, and with the iconic George Martin as recording manager, he was off and running with many more hits.
Terry Parsons had satisfied the toughest, most cynical, and certainly the most musicianly audience he ever had to face. He sang with a gimmickless freshness, as if the lyrics were his own personal thoughts, phrasing the song with a maturity that belied his inexperience. From that moment on, he was one of them. He loosened his tie, opened his collar, took off his bus driver's jacket and started a new career. Decca soon decided Terence Edward Parsons needed a different name for his recording career, and it took a matter of minutes to choose Matt, taken from Matt White, an Australian Fleet Street journalist who worked for the Daily Sketch at the time and had written a centre-page spread of adulation about the singing bus driver, and Munro from Winnie's father, Munro Atwell. Matt Munro was born. In later years, Matt's name was legally changed along with his family, all except for his eldest son, Mitchell, who retained his original birth moniker. But the constant misspelling came to irk him. It was either spelt M-U-N-R-O, M-O-N-R-O-E, or even M-U-N-R-O-W-E, sometimes as much as three different ways within the same article. It's easy to remember. It's an anagram of moron. Laying down the album in one day, Matt recorded Blue and Sentimental, containing 10 standards, his first commercial recording for a long-playing record. Most experienced artists took that amount of time over 4 or 5 titles. Decca released the long-playing record before he had even made a 78 RPM. Producer John Browell heard a test pressing of Everybody Falls in Love with Someone at Matt's audition for Decca, and was so excited about it that he agreed to attend an audition that Winnie had set up for Matt at the BBC's Variety Department. Only a few hours later, Matt had signed a contract to appear on the Showband show with Cyril Stapleton in his orchestra, the most popular showband in Britain.
This is an exhaustively researched book, using material such as an archive of diaries, contracts and other documents which Michelle's mother kept. These give a rare insight into the sheer grind of being a vocalist. Arriving on the music scene, just as it was about to be transformed by the birth of rock and roll, his career was not without its ups and downs. The book recounts his experience in the USA, which ended prematurely, partly due to homesickness, but also Munro's feeling that arrangements were unsuitable, recordings rushed, and the material of inferior quality. The book describes the demands made upon the singer by his schedule, causing prolonged absences from his wife and family, which may have attributed to his reliance on alcohol during times of frequent loneliness.
1961 saw Matt named top international act by Billboard magazine, an American publication dedicated to the music industry. It maintained a number of internationally accepted music charts that tracked the most popular songs and albums in a range of categories. Its most famous chart was the Billboard Hot 100, grading the top 100 songs by combining single disc sales and radio airplay regardless of genre. The New Musical Express chart survey described Matt as the artist who had restored class to commerciality. 1961 also saw Matt in the charts with no fewer than four singles. Matt met with George Martin and a date was set for the beginning of January to record for a compilation album that Parlophone was putting together. Matt was added to the cast of the All-Star Disc, which was based on the Parade of the Pops radio series. The LP was waxed under the supervision of recording manager Norman Newell and made in EMI's Hampstead studio before an invited audience. Other contributors included the King Brothers, Russ Conway, Janet Richmond, Gary Mills and Bob Miller and the Millermen, who were one of the mainstays of the radio series. Matt recorded two tracks, I Should Care and I'm a Fool to Want You, in the one day. Although the album Parade of the Pops was recorded exclusively for Parlophone, people mistakenly assumed, because of the title, it had been made by the BBC. George wanted Matt back in the studio to record the next single, but had to wait until Matt's weekly appearance at the Piccadilly Club in Glasgow was honoured. Matt was, however, able to arrange an evening session in between his lunchbox commitments. The choice of recording studio is a matter for the artist and producer to decide on, but EMI were very protective over who used Studio One. Their use was determined by status, and when Portrait hit the charts, Matt was finally allowed to record in the prestigious setting. George and Matt met for lunch to discuss the next choices. It was a difficult decision, as it was important not to let the success of Portrait pale against another flop.
Matt also had a lot of good luck to go with his raw talent and cheerful temperament. He was blessed with a loving family, a soulmate in wife Mickey, who knew the music business and was able to manage his business affairs, and he had many, many friends. The book includes many quotes and anecdotes from people who he worked with, loved and laughed with. There are also a number of quotes from Matt himself, which show what a modest man he was. The numerous photographs throughout the book also help take you on a journey through his lifetime.
By the end of June 1965, Matt's album was still receiving solid reviews and had been voted Pop LP of the Month by Melody Maker. But sadly, the acclaim didn't help the disc climb the charts. Don Black pointed out on the new LP's sleeve that Ella Fitzgerald, Connie Francis, Steve Lawrence, Andy Williams, Perry Como, Victor Moan, Sammy Davis Jr. and Sinatra were among those who had paid Matt the ultimate compliment of recording songs that Matt had originally introduced. The Birmingham Evening Mail even added a footnote, and none of them has yet been able to better the original version. TV Times was equally complimentary. Matt ranks way up with Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Andy Williams, Como and all the world's leading ballad singers, yet he is grossly underrated in Britain. Listen to his I Have Dreamed. 14 titles, including a tremendous performance of the moving Exodus theme, interpreted with warmth, sincerity and distinctive class. This one must rate as one of the major ballad albums of the year. Even with the new album out, George wanted to record tracks for a follow-up, so Matt flew from Yarmouth to London to spend three Sundays at Abbey Road. One of the tracks, And Roses and Roses, was so good, they decided to place it on the B-side of Matt's new single, Before You Go, which was issued in August 1965. It was an earnestly sincere romantic ballad, for which the singer was so well known. But it also missed the charts. 230,000 theatre-goers watched Showtime over the course of the 1965 season, 4,000 more than the previous year. It played to a record 98.7% capacity, trumping the 97.8% in 1964. The show was described as the best we have ever had, and the chairman of the Entertainment and Publicity Committee, Mr. Stone, presented the artists with lighters as a token of his appreciation. Alongside his work as Matt's manager, in 1965, Don Black began to find success in his own right as a lyricist. John Barry had taken note of Don's songwriting talent on Walk Away. Like most of the music industry, Barry spent a fair amount of time in and around Denmark Street, and on one of those occasions bumped into the leading songwriter. Everyone in Tin Pan Alley would swap trade news, and these two men were no exception. It was over lunch that Barry offered Don a commission, the chance to work on the next Bond film. This was an enormous opportunity to both write lyrics for a successful movie franchise and to work with John Barry, who was making quite a name for himself. Thunderball was a huge success when released in 1965, and the soundtrack earned the creative duo a gold disc. However, even more important for Don was that in Barry he had found a great writing partner. They reunited for Barry's next film, which would make Don his fortune. In fact, Don would soon find himself straddling two careers, as Matt's manager and as a burgeoning lyricist. For the moment, the partnership between Matt and Don benefited them both.
This is not your standard biography by a family member. It is written in the third person, and Michelle doesn't shy away from her father's problems or gloss over uncomfortable subjects either. The care and attention which has gone into this book is clearly evident. I must also mention the foreword to the book, which is very honest and an exceptionally moving piece of writing. Michelle's ultimate reason for writing this biography was for her son Max to know who his grandfather was. I think she has succeeded in her aim. If you're a Matt fan, this is a must read. And if you have barely heard of the man, like me, this still makes a very good read indeed.
From Southside to the world. In association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.
Pharma Nord is the chemist to call for your nutritional needs. All of our products have been built on scientific research to help with your health. Pharma Nord can even help in such areas as senile dementia, strokes, and Alzheimer's. All our products are made in accordance with pharmaceutical standards and guidelines. And all our products are just one call away. Call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989. That's 01670 519989. Or visit pharmanord.co.uk. Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
With over 80 ensuite bathrooms and a high quality care for residents provided 24/7 by qualified nurses and carers, Roseville Care Centre provides a perfect home for its residents' emotional, spiritual, social, physical and intellectual needs.
A purpose-built residential care facility in the heart of Ingleby Barwick, Roseville is a care centre which provides facilities to accommodate residential, elderly EMI and nursing service users, offering both short and long stay accommodation as well as respite and daycare.
To find out more, please telephone 01642 308 188.
When you suffer a road accident that's not your fault, it's easy to be persuaded to go along with your insurer's recommendations. But I spoke to personal injury expert Charles Ather about that.
In my opinion, phrases like, you have free legal cover with this policy, are meaningless. If the accident wasn't your fault, you've nothing to pay anyway. I think what your insurer may mean is, but we've already sold your claim.
And if I don't want to be sold, can I choose my own solicitor?
Of course. It's your right to choose what's best for you.
Text claim to 81400 now.
From Southside to the world. In association with Middlesbrough Library Services, it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton.
Yes, I'm not sure about that, really. I mean, I'm sure it's the Book of the Month with Jill Appleton, but I'm just not sure about Judith's interpretation of Gracie Fields doing the Book of the Month. Anyway, Southside Broadcasting with, of course, the Book of the Month. We'll move straight after thanking Jill Appleton for another quintessentially wonderful précis of The Singer's Singer, The Life and Times and Life and Music of Matt Munro, to, of course, our regular co-presenter, Jill Prowse. Jill, I trust you're keeping well.
I'm well, thank you.
The Singer's Singer, The Life and Music of Matt Munro. Obviously, Michelle is one of us in many ways because she does a regular feature on our sister service, Siren FM, every Wednesday, featured there. So you might be saying, be gentle with me, but what's the final Prowse view on The Singer's Singer?
Where to start? It's a bit of a roller coaster as a book. When I picked it up, I like autobiographies and biographies. I sort of knew the name and I could sort of remember him from my childhood on programmes and things. but didn't know a great deal about him. Started to read it, and I have to say to anybody out there who isn't a big Matt Munro fan, but like myself knew a bit of him, don't be put off at the beginning. And that's not because it's badly written or anything. It's marvellously written. And it's a fascinating insight into the music industry back then, which I had no idea about. But it's quite heavy. It's quite wordy. There's a lot of dates, a lot of names. And At the very beginning, I was thinking, oh, there's a lot of pages in this book to get through. But then it takes over. And then you sort of, you get wrapped up in the story of Matt Munro. And I suppose it's as you start to get to a time when you know the names a bit more and you sort of, you're talking about, you know, Val Doonigan and all the greats from your childhood. And
the Beatles, George the Beatles, Martin, yes, Sammy Davis Jr.
Yes, exactly. So many names in there. And it's absolutely fascinating. And I think it's a fabulous tribute by Michelle to her father. I think she couldn't have done a better job, really. So I'm full of admiration from that point of view because, as Jill said, it's honest. It seems like it's honestly written. There's times in it where I thought he sounded a very generous man, and I don't mean money-wise. I mean in so many ways, with his time and his praise and to his fellow musicians. And I think he was, it just comes across time and time again what a likeable person he was and how much he was liked by his peers. But then every now and again you get a little feeling that, yeah, his children didn't see a lot of him and that he was away a lot and he was very driven, that's obvious, and he didn't say no to anything. It's a good job he had Mickey, yeah, because without Mickey he wouldn't have got where he did. There's not many wives, I think, who would have done what she did.
Well,
really.
You probably would, Jill. Yeah, I just thought that.
Well, yes, we maybe. Maybe. I suppose it's a true love situation. Yeah. You could tell it came through time and time again that they were a love match and they did love each other. And so, yeah, I just got totally wrapped up in the book. And from starting off thinking, oh, this is going to be heavy going, I hope I get through it before, you know, we do the review, suddenly I was finished before I knew it. And I was just sad I'd finished. And I think that the thing with the book is, because you get so engrossed in it and you like the people in it so much and you like Matt Munro so much, you don't want the end to come because you know what the end is. Mm. And because, you know, Michelle started at the beginning. You know, you find yourself almost in tears right at the start, don't you? And then you're sort of, you're galloping towards the end. You're galloping towards this ending that can't be changed. And it makes you feel quite uptight and upset about it. So, yeah, what can I say? I think she did a fantastic job. And I think it's a must read, whether you thought, you know, if you loved Matt Munro, you have to read this book. If you're like me, still, you have to read this book. It's a great book.
Yes, well, I stand by what I said earlier, in fact, that for me it's the book of 2010. It's taken over from Marina Fiorato, obviously, was the holder of whatever it's worth, the Southside book of 2009. I echo all those sort of things. I think anybody who listens to Softly As I Leave You and knows the opening sequence of the book, we have Michelle by her father's, at his deathbed, in essence. Major chills from that point of view. And hats off to Michelle for certainly putting something together and sticking by her guns, because as we found out when she was gracing us with a presence together with Graham Harper at the Middlesbrough Literary Festival, she had to fight for that because the publisher that she eventually went with were looking for all sorts of changes and additions to that, but she was very committed to ensuring that it remained as she'd wanted to write it. Now, you could argue that sometimes authors who take that line could be overly egotistical, they could be missing the point and so on, but at the same time, I think she hasn't. You know, it has been written very from a very personal point of view. And like yourself, actually, received a copy, worked our way through it, and I thought, okay, fine, we're doing a piece with Michelle, now become a regular on our Wednesday shows and as featured on that basis. But there was a time where we thought it's 630 pages, but it does move extremely quickly through that. Yeah. Jill, you were present, obviously, when Michelle was with us at the Literary Festival scenario, obviously working with Graham Harper, perspective, and Graham met up with Matt when he was working, before he was directing Doctor Who and Coronation Street, etc., working as a production assistant on the Val Doonigan show. Your thoughts?
Well, Michelle is a really lovely person, and we had a lovely afternoon, and she was very, very interesting. And she did say, you know, when she was wanting to get the book published, she was quite adamant that they did not make any changes whatsoever. And bearing in mind that she's, you know, she's not a writer, it's really well written. It's a very interesting book. And I loved all the little anecdotes in there. And it sounds like her dad had a really good sense of
of humour, and there's lots of lovely photographs in as well, all right through the book, not just like in the centre of the book, like you get a lot with biographies. They're all go right the way through. You keep getting these pictures, and you can see how you know, how everything's developed. I mean, and you can tell that it was really hard work. I mean, you just, I always assume with celebrities that it's all, you know, it's all, they have this like wonderful lifestyle, but it wasn't like that at all. He had lots of ups and downs, and he did make some decisions that possibly weren't the right ones, and he sort of paid for it, but that's life, isn't it?
I think certainly Michelle doesn't shy away from his alcoholism, his questions his child from that point of view, but she doesn't focus solely on that. I think it's very much a life-affirming book. Yes, there are moments which are very poignant, which kind of make you think, ooh, that's quite interesting. And again, I'm coming to this as somebody who knew of Matt Munro, a bit like yourself, Jill. Knew, obviously, he was the man behind From Russia With Love, Born Free, The Italian Job, so many sort of movie soundtracks that kind of feature Matt Munro's The Quiller Memorandum and so on. And yet there was something more to the man there. And again, it was an interesting line because clearly he was a success. Understandably, he's billed as the third greatest export Britain had in the 60s after the Beatles and James Bond. But at the same time, it was a classic case of almost a prophet not being recognised in his own country.
Oh, yeah, that came across time and time again, and it got me really frustrated by the end. I felt quite angry by the end of the book, I felt. And the fact that Michelle had to fight for a tribute to her dad, and it took 2 years, that made me really angry as well. It was as if, in his own country, he just couldn't be appreciated for the talent he was. And, you know, I mean, I didn't know anything about Spain. I didn't know about him singing all these records in their own language and being an icon there. I thought that was fantastic. I didn't know about his younger son following in his footsteps and being taken up over there because, you know, because of his father, if you like, but because of his own talent. So, yeah, you did. The thing about the book is it was everything, warts and all. And as Jill said, I like the fact that there was these pictures all the way through because they were important, actually. With a book of this length and with quite a wordy book, even though it's fascinating, I think the pictures throughout, they helped the book along because every other page you turn to, there's something to sort of give you a visual image of what you're reading about, and that's very helpful. So for somebody out there who thinks, oh, gosh, 630-odd pages, there's no way I'm going to get that. Don't, because you can read it in bite-sized pieces anyway, you know. And the point is that these pictures all the way through, and the quotes all the way through, that's fascinating as well. It's not just Michelle talking about her dad or as a third person. You've got quotes from people, including Matt and Mickey and all of them all the way through.
Well,
it's brilliant.
Yeah, and not just that. The names on the sleeve, Frank Sinatra, Cliff Richard, Paul McCartney, George Martin, Quincy Jones, Henry Mancini. You're really talking about a pantheon of stars there.
That's right.
Put it this way, we're not going to turn them down on Southside Broadcasting, are we?
No, not at all.
That's the key thing from that. Again, absolutely wonderful from that perspective. I think a final point, which I thought was a wonderful encapsulation of Matt's professionalism, is how he would actually move from a sellout gig in Australia or the Far East or indeed Spain, etc., or Las Vegas, and then he might do the Stockton Working Men's Club. And obviously, Cannon Bill Hall was
that
there.
That was fascinating, wasn't it?
I mean,
yeah.
Can you see Madonna doing that?
No.
Because it is the equivalent in many ways to sort of overseas success. And that, or Robbie Williams, perhaps, you know, moving to that sort of level. It's an interesting thing. And also a wonderful tale in professionalism and the importance of professionalism, I feel, from both sides, from the author's side and from Matt's side. OK, it's time for the scores on the door, so to speak. Who should we go to? Jill Appleton first.
I'll give it an 8.
An 8? Oh, that's for Jill.
That's good for Jill, isn't it?
Yes, it's very good indeed.
I'm going to give it a 9. Good 9.
Well, I'm going to go for 10, actually.
Well done.
I'm going to. I think it's only one other text I got, and I'm going to give it a 10 out of 10 because I really did think it was an outstanding piece and very enjoyable. And if anybody wants to actually have a almost a kind of Bible in terms of the importance of keeping on till the end of the road, keeping living that dream, focusing on the whole setup, and keeping professional about it, because that was one thing you could say, whether he was Terry Parsons singing in the army when he was doing his stuff over there, where he was doing his radio work over in Hong Kong and Asia and so on, or whether he's actually picking up his whole scenario. It's very much a quintessential case of professionalism. For somebody who I do appreciate now getting to age where I can listen to the tunes, the things that he actually sings about, and you just think, actually, this man was good.
Yeah.
This guy had good phrasing, etc. So excellent stuff from that. And where do we go to from this then, Jill Appleton?
Oh, well, next month we're going to have a bit of science fiction, I think.
Hey.
For a change.
Yeah, I suppose the only one we've done so far over the 2 years of the programme is probably Jekyll and Hyde. Yeah. And maybe the very first
one we did.
We did
Shadowmancer, didn't we, at the
very
start.
We did at the very beginning, exactly. And we've gone from one of the greats of science fiction or science fantasy, Ray Bradbury, I believe.
Yes. Mm. So this should be good. Fahrenheit 451.
In which we might also be bringing on board another newbie to the Book of the Month Club and to Southside, Simon Marshall, who's an English literature major from the US of A.
Excellent.
Although he's British originally. So a bit like Matt Monroe, really. Went over there, he decided to work elsewhere, etc. More about that later. Fantastic stuff. Just keep on going. So I think a solid sort of thumbs up there for Matt Munro, The Singer's Singer, The Life and Music of Matt Munro, of course, by Michelle Munro. And remember, it's an anagram of moron, M-O-N-R-O. Very important.
Book of the Month. More than a podcast, greater than a radio show, quite simply an audio treat for the enlightened with Jill Appleton and Jill Prowse. And every so often, some extremely lovely writers.